Gary Parrish. It's Tuesday, June 27th. Welcome back to the Island College Basketball Podcast. I got Matt Norlander here with me, and let me first apologize for the length of time between episodes of the Island College Basketball Podcast. We were supposed to record last week. We didn't record last week because my travel plans were crazy. I flew to New York last Monday and got stuck in airports because of weather for like 18 hours. I think I got to the Memphis airport around 9 a.m. and didn't actually land in LaGuardia till after 2 a.m. East Coast time. So that was a long day. That sucked. And then on Tuesday, I was in studio in New York all day doing pre-draft shows for CBS Sports Network. Traveled home Wednesday, more delays, another long day. Then flew to Fort Lauderdale on Thursday for the CBSSports.com draft show. Then flew home early Friday. So I think in a span of 5 days, I was in five different airports: Memphis, Detroit, Atlanta, Fort Lauderdale, and LaGuardia in NYC. So it was a mess, but things have settled down now, and here we are. Matt Norlander, what's up with you?
Hey, man, it's great to talk. We are approaching the end of June here, and it's kind of wild. Big picture, it doesn't feel like the Final Four was almost 3 months ago, personally, but we are really getting there, and we haven't hit the halfway point of the offseason, but we're moving there quickly, and now the draft is kind of behind us. I do feel as though, from our perspective, when the season ends, obviously it's like you hit the decompression button. There's a big release, but there's still plenty of news. And then through April, May into June, because the draft is something that we both constantly write about and follow and track, there's still a hum, so to speak, to what we do. And now that the draft has passed, to me, I don't know if you agree or not, but to me, this actually feels like the off season has really started. Would you agree?
Yes, because there is something going on from the moment the college basketball season ends up until the NBA draft. And this year was a little unusual in that regard, in the sense that we got a major coaching change in June. Like, that doesn't usually happen. But, you know, I used to remember, I don't guess this happens so much anymore because I have the radio show, so people always know what I'm going to be doing, or at least that I have something to do every day. But I remember when, before the radio show, people would constantly ask me, so what do you do when basketball season's over? I'm like, write about basketball. Like, there's always something going on. Like, okay, somebody wins a national championship, cut down the nets, you fly home from the Final Four. Well, then you still typically have the coaching carousel spinning a little bit. There's jobs open that need to be filled. When those jobs are filled, they sometimes open other jobs, so on and so forth. So that carries on for a little while. Then you got underclassmen declaring for the NBA draft or announcing they're going to return to school for another year. Then you've got the draft deadline. So some of the people who declared for the NBA draft, they're going to be announcing that they're actually withdrawing from the NBA draft. There's more news. Then you've got, and this was especially true this year, multiple five-star prospects still uncommitted. So that drags into May and even into June. Then you've got, you know, the NBA draft that constantly produces stories, if only because we're doing mock drafts basically every other day. And then the draft gets done. We've got all the jobs filled in college basketball. There are no notable prospects who remain uncommitted. So there's nothing going on right now except for a dude driving his car inside Mizzou Arena.
Yeah, that was...
How bizarre was that? How drunk do you have to be to drive your car inside Mizzou Arena?
It's been a briefly interesting offseason for Mizzou. Not that we have to slip down the tiger hole, so to speak, and that
you keep your tiger hole to yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Jeremiah Tillman, who's the second best recruit coming into the team next year, he got busted for underage drinking.
What if Jeremiah Tillman would have been the guy driving his car around
inside Mizzou? Oh, gosh. I know, right? Seriously. So you had that, and then this bozo, who thankfully I guess didn't do any damage to the actual court in and of itself. But yeah, it's there's always something, man. There's always something going down. But off season is here, and then so what do you want to hit on here? Like, what do you want to? I'm ceding to you. The floor is yours. So we got a few things. I got something.
This can't possibly be the best way to sell a college basketball podcast by spending the first four.
We're gonna have,
spending the first 4 minutes saying, you know what, there really is nothing going on. I don't know why you're listening to this right now. We could still talk draft a little bit, both what just happened last week and looking ahead to next year, because it's actually fairly reasonable to look ahead to next year. My mock draft. How about this? Is this good or bad? What kind of grade would you give me? Everybody loves draft grades. What kind of grade would you give me, Matt Norlander? First five picks, I got exactly right in the exact order. The first 13 players off the board are the exact 13 players I had coming off the board. Not necessarily in the right order. Like I had Markkanen going 6 and Isaac going 7. Isaac went 6. Markkanen went 7. But in terms of the first 13 off the board, those are the 13 players I had coming off the board first. In total, 26 of the 30 first round draft picks are guys I had projected to go in the first round. And 52 of the 60 picks are guys that I had projected to get picked. It's not bad, is it?
I'll give you a B.
B?
Plus, I think.
B?
B plus. Let me fit a B plus. That's better than a B. Because one, you're no different from many others that basically landed all the first six picks or, you know, in order, first five picks in order. And then there weren't a lot of surprises, GP. It was a lot of consensus there, which does make me think. Because I wonder if the mechanisms behind all these mock drafts, and there are plenty of connected people that try and do this kind of stuff and deal with scouts and general managers, if it was any sort of groupthink involved there, or if this was an aberrational year in that everyone thought, nope, these are the players that should be going at the top of the board, or obviously, as I wrote at the draft last week, is this a truly aberrational year? And even I wonder, a year we'll never see like again, because it was nothing but freshmen and freshmen and freshmen and freshmen until you got to Kennard, who was a sophomore. The first 10 college players picked were freshmen. There were 16 taken in the first round. That was a record. And so more than ever before, we were picking off of potential and certainly some talent there. But it seemed as though this was a year that I don't think will be duplicated. And perhaps in part, and I know we're going to get to this eventually, because we might just have a change to the whole way that players enter the draft and when their eligibility is available and all that stuff.
Yeah, this was obviously unusual because it was unprecedented to have this many first-year one-and-done players selected in the first round. But I think that speaks to something we've been talking about literally for years, which is this freshman class was exceptional. You know, I don't know that there's a LeBron James in the class or a Kevin Durant in the class, but there's a whole bunch of really interesting prospects in the class. And so it really should not have been much of a surprise what happened on last Thursday night. And I do think that you're mostly right. I haven't looked at everybody else's mocks and compared them to how mine did, but I imagine whether it's Chad Ford or Sam Vecenie or Jonathan Givony, like they're all pretty, I bet we're all pretty close in how many of the lottery picks we got correct, how many first round picks we got correct, how many of the 60 players in total we got correct. There weren't a whole lot of really, really big surprises. The guys basically went, you know, if you were doing nothing but following mock drafts, didn't watch a single basketball game all year, but just looked at the mock drafts every day, you know, they basically, the players were selected last Thursday about in the range where they were always expected to be selected. I think the one surprise early, and it was interesting because I tweeted this in real time after whoever it was that came off the board at 13 came off the board. And I said, well, okay.
Donovan Mitchell.
Donovan Mitchell, right. I said, okay, I'm now the 13 guys that have been picked are the first 13 guys I projected to get picked. But this is where I think it starts to get a little insane, because I really did believe this. I thought there was a clear first five players, and they're the ones that went one through five. You know, Fultz, Lonzo, Jason Tatum, Josh Jackson, De'Aaron Fox. I thought those guys were always going to be the top five picks. And then I thought the next eight, you know, that group that included Zach Collins and Luke Kennard and Jonathan Isaac and Lauri Markkanen, and Malik Monk, Dennis Smith, Frank Ntilikina, I thought all those guys were coming off next. And then once we got to 14, I was like, okay, now who knows? Now here we go. And then, of course, the big surprise was Bam Adebayo going 14th overall to the Miami Heat, because, no, like, I don't think you can find a mock draft anywhere that had him in the lottery. I had him in the 20s, I think even the high 20s, like around 23, 24 maybe. But I don't think anybody had him going in the top 15. So that's when the drafts got a little unpredictable, but still, the guys who were projected to go in the first round, for the most part, they went in the first round. I believe the first 26 picks were all selections that I had projected in the first round. And then the last four, whoever they were, those are the ones that I had as second round picks. It kind of went, the players kind of came off the board in a pretty predictable way.
The Adebayo thing was a big shocker, and I do like that. I like when we get picks like that, or that kind of just fool everyone that was forecasting the draft and prognosticating. And I don't know if I buy Adebayo at 14. What's interesting is the frame of reference with him going to 14 now, because when he was a prospect,
right?
I had a coach at a blue blood program that's not John Calipari tell me this kid is going to be in the mix to be the number one overall pick. And from him to go to that, and when I saw him like in the moment and seeing him play, I did not know a ton about Bam at that time, but I thought, damn. And then the way I was watching, I was like, okay, maybe. But from that to then seeing like how he was good, not great at Kentucky, to then seeing, okay, well, his game is more suited for 1996 than 2017.
Right.
So he's worth like a pick in the 20s. And then the Heat totally take a flyer on him. I'll be interested to see what kind of player he becomes, because I think that he could be a solid NBA player. But if you told me Adebayo was out of the league in 4 years, I wouldn't necessarily be shocked given his style of play versus how the NBA is going. Okay, GP,
let me say this real quick about him.
Okay.
The people who run the Miami Heat are obviously smarter about basketball than I am, or at least I think they are. They certainly have more rings than I do. But like in a league that is changing, where everybody wants athletic bigs and strong and stretch fours, like trying to pair Hassan Whiteside with Bam Adebayo, if that's what you're trying to do, like that's not the way basketball's played anymore. It doesn't mean you can't play it that way, but there's a reason Golden State plays the way it plays, and a reason the Cleveland Cavaliers are playing the way they play, and there's a reason behind both those teams, advancing to the NBA Finals. It's style of play more than maybe ever seems to be moving in a direction of stretch fours, athletic bigs, shoot threes. And I don't know if you can play that way with Hassan Whiteside and Bam Adebayo, but we'll see. I will say I was closer to being right about Bam Adebayo a year ago than I was like on the afternoon of the draft, because if you go back and look at my 2017 mock that I put up in June 2016, in other words, exactly like what I just did last week with the 2018 mock. 2016 draft goes in our rearview mirror. Now let's go ahead and start looking ahead to 2017. A year in advance, I had Bam Adebayo going 12th overall. And so he ends up going 14. But it is interesting because when I tweeted the link to the 2018 mock draft, like last week, you get all these people going, come on, get out of here. Like, what? It's too early to do that. And A, In the world of online journalism, it's never too early to have a mock draft out there. Like, people can roll their eyes at it, but people click on it, and it's easy page views and blah, blah, blah. But beyond that, basketball is a sport where we kind of do know who's who a year in advance. You can look at the one I posted on June 24th, 2016. Number one, I had Josh Jackson going first overall to the Brooklyn Nets, which, of course, ends up being the Boston Celtics. So I had Josh Jackson going first. I had Jason Tatum going third. I had Markelle Fultz going fourth. So I had three of the top four picks projected, where they had them in the top four a year ago before the draft. And I won't go through the whole thing, but I had six of the top 10, and I believe like 16 of the top 30. And it would have been more than that, except like Miles Bridges didn't enter the draft I thought that he would, so on and so forth. So basketball is a sport where you do have a pretty good idea of who's going to be who, even a year in advance. And so when I put that 2018 NBA mock draft out last Friday, I bet you if we look at it on June 24th, 2018, you're going to be able to go, yep, Michael Porter looks like he's in play for the number one pick. DeAndre Ayton looks like he's in play for the number one pick. The kid from Slovenia looks like he's in play for the number one pick. Mohamed Bamba looks like he's in play for the number one pick. Like these guys, they're identified, while in high school, and really barring injury or just colossal disappointment, that would be Harry Giles' situation and the year before Scal Labissiere's situation. Barring something like that, you kind of do know a year in advance who's going to be picked, at the top of every NBA draft. It is remarkable in that way.
All right. So there are two different conversations at play here, because when the guys that are taken in the top 10 and in the lottery and all that, a lot of that does correlate back to how they performed as 16 and 17 year olds on the AAU circuit and how they projected in terms of lottery picks. That is, to me, not necessarily the same thing as projecting as to how they will wind up in the entirety of their NBA careers. So what I'm getting at here is, one, I think there was more positivity around the draft this year with where players went and which teams picked than I've ever seen, which is fine. But the statistics show that nearly half of all first round picks don't even make it to a second contract. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to be a downer here, but that's the reality. So we're going to do a quick little thing here. I'm just going to throw a few guys at you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, this all looks good in the here and the now, but a lot of these dudes are not going to make it in the league to 2020, 2021, okay? So I want you just instinctively, okay, instinctively tell me, and then I'd love if a listener, and I'll play too, a listener could keep track of this and then like 5 years from now remind us of this, because we're gonna have long forgotten what we said, but I'd like to just see what we think now in the moment. And then come 2022, what happens, okay? Because no doubt about it, we'll still be shouting out Devin Downey. And even if it's just you and me in a cabin in the woods, my man, we're still going
to
be doing this.
Shouts right, to so. Devin Downey, the great Devin Downey. I don't know if you all remember right. What he did once upon a time. Let me spell it out for you. It was January 26, 2010. He had 30 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. It's a 68-62 win over John Calipari's Kentucky Wildcats. It will forever be known as the first loss John Calipari ever took as coach at the University of Kentucky. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry, MF, and Teagle.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you a few different prediction levels, and you tell me where you think these players are going to wind up. So we'll see. I'm not going to say Hall of Famer because that's way too hard. Every draft has like 1.5 Hall of Famers on average. So we'll say All-Star, Starter, Role Player, Second contract, or out of the league. And out of the league would signal doesn't reach the second contract, okay?
Gotcha.
All-star, starter, role player, second contract, or out of the league. Okay. I'm not gonna do all the top five picks, but let's specifically go to Fultz. Who's the number one pick? What is your projection for Markelle Fultz's NBA career?
All-star.
I will say second contract. What about...
You think he's only... Like, what do you mean? Like, second contract?
I think – no, I'll say – yeah, I'll say – no, sorry. That's – you know what? That's too low. I'll say role player. I think Markelle Fultz will wind up being insanely overvalued in this draft versus all the other players. I'm just not as in on Fultz as pretty much anyone else.
Wow, that's interesting.
So, yeah. How about Josh Jackson?
Starter, but not an all-star.
I will say all-star. I think Josh Jackson will eventually make an all-star game and multiple. I think he will wind up as a top three player in this draft. Okay. How about...
Well, let's be clear. Like, it's not hard to make one all-star team. I mean, it's hard.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah, so, yeah,
a lot of people make one.
Let's qualify all-star game. All-star is multiple.
Multiple all-star appearances. Right.
So multiple. Just fall into one.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. I don't think he'll do that. He could. I would say starter, but just short of all-star level player.
All right. How about Malik Monk?
Starter.
I would say starter. I think that as well. And
I could definitely I could see all-star, but I'll just go starter.
Starter to me indicates that you're going to stay in the league 8 to 12 years basically. Doesn't mean you'll be a starter for 12 years, but if you're a starter level, then you're definitely in for at least 8 years. I do think Monk's skill set will allow for that. Let's go Justin Jackson, who went 15th to the Kings.
Starter.
Starter, I agree with you. I think Justin Jackson is going to be a really, really good pro. And I would go as far as to say, GP, that I think that he will be a top six player when we look back a decade from now. I think he's going to be that consistently good. I think that he is built for the current NBA and will continue to have success.
Which, by the way, I love what Sacramento did on draft night. Like, you get De'Aaron Fox at 5, then you trade 10 for 15 and 20. You get Justin Jackson at 15, so you got a shooter to play with De'Aaron Fox. And then you get a free swing at 20 and take it on Harry Giles. Like, I love that. I think they had a remark. Like, and then you get Frank Mason in the second round. Like, I said this on the draft show last Thursday night. I don't know that I've ever put these words in this exact order, but I'll say it for the first time in my life. Sacramento's like having a good night. Like I thought they did good things there. I might have been tempted if I were them to just go ahead and snatch up Monk at 10 and go De'Aaron Fox, Malik Monk, that's our future backcourt. Like I would have been down with that as well. But the idea that you could flip 10 for 15 and 20, get Justin Jackson, who I think you might value a little more than I do, but I do think he's going to be a relevant NBA player. And then you get a free swing on Giles. Like I love that. And let me bounce this off to you, then we'll get back to the game.
Okay.
If you were running the Sacramento franchise, would you be down with this? We're going to take Harry Giles, and he's going to get all his guaranteed money. He's a multimillionaire now. He's the 20th pick in the first round. You are not going to play in the NBA next year. You're going to the D League or the G League. And what we want you to do, because we think your knees are fine or going to be fine. If we didn't, we would never have selected you 20th overall. So we don't think you have many physical hurdles to overcome. But you clearly have a mental hurdle to overcome. You've got to get your mindset back where you trust your body and where you remember what it was like to dominate other basketball players. It has been a long time since you've dominated other basketball players. And you're not going to be able to do that in the NBA. Like you're going to play 6 minutes a game and you're probably going to be overwhelmed. And, you know, you were an ineffective player at Duke. You're not going to be an effective player in the NBA right away. But go to the G League. I want you to be the G League MVP. I want you to average 25 points and 13 rebounds. And then let's get you back mentally, get you back physically, then get you to the NBA in year two, and maybe we got something special. Is that a reasonable approach to Harry Giles? Don't even consider the NBA in his rookie season.
That is reasonable. I think Giles personally wouldn't necessarily fight that, knowing the kid just a little bit. I think his father absolutely would.
Right.
But it's definitely an experiment worth strongly considering because, I mean, Giles has openly admitted that there certainly is just a mental aspect and element to him playing where, you know, at least when he told me in February, like he felt he was getting better, but there just was not complete entire confidence. And that'll happen when you've had your knee cut on three times. So it's certainly, you know, that is specifically because he has his money. It's certainly worth trying, particularly if you're the Kings and you have enough elsewhere in terms of youthful talent, you know, from blue blood schools and can kind of sell them on that. And then, yeah, in a way it brings, granted, you're going to have to see Giles produce, but it would bring a bit more of that mythical element to Giles if he continued to play well at that level, because he was obviously one of the more written about and discussed prospects in high school over the past 2 years.
It is funny. You look at their roster, and it is all like players from blue blood schools. I mean, it's like Scalabissier from Kentucky, Willie Cauley-Stein from Kentucky. I think Ben McLemore is a free agent, but like from Kansas, Frank Mason from Kansas, De'Aaron Fox from Kentucky, Justin Jackson from North Carolina, Harry Giles from Duke. I mean, it's like a whole bunch of like really recognizable college names on that Sacramento roster, which may not amount to anything, but it is
right.
Something I,
mean,
it is something I noticed.
You look at the first and second team All-NBA teams and third team, and there are plenty of guys that didn't go to Blue Blood, so that doesn't necessarily guarantee it. But I don't know. There could be something said for that. Okay, a few more names. How about Michigan's DJ Wilson?
He's one of the guys I could see not getting a second contract.
I'm with you there.
Yeah.
I'm just not as in on him. Now, listen, there are players over the years that I've been so wrong on that have like kind of stuck in the league that I didn't think would do it. But Wilson, he's got the way that he tested, obviously, I think played a lot into him going so high. I saw him play basketball, and he's good. I just don't think he was worthy of a top 20 pick, and I don't necessarily think that he's going to stick. And, you know, I don't say this to bring the guy down, but again, let's have a rational, reasonable discussion about the draft. Not these 31st round picks are not going to stick in the league for a decade. It just will not happen. It never does. So we got to try and pick who's not going to necessarily stay. How about, here's a guy that I'll openly admit I'm going to guess on. I have no idea, but I thought that he would have been a top 15 undisputed player in college basketball next season, maybe even a top 10 player, Jarrett Allen.
Role player.
I think that's where I'm going to land as well. He is, I love his look. I hope he never changes it. He's straight out of 1977 with that stash and fro. I think a role player is probably right, but I see the most variance to him, I guess. Like, if he was out in 2 years or stuck around for 12, I guess I'd buy either one. I will also say out of the league and play, perhaps playing in Europe in the next 4 years for OG Anunoby. What about you?
Role player, but I could see him becoming a starter. I actually like him more than I think most people do.
Okay, why are you in on OG?
I just think at the very worst, he can be a wing who can guard multiple positions. Like, there's value in that. You know, just saying, hey, I mean, it's why I like Josh Jackson better than I like Jason Tatum. And I like Jason Tatum, but hey, go out there. Hey, we got Kevin Durant tonight. Go cause him problems. We got LeBron James tonight. Go make things difficult for him. We got Paul George tonight. Go make things difficult for him. I think OG can do that. You know, obviously got to get healthy. I wish he shot it a little better. I wish maybe he was a little more, I don't know, some of the there's some questions about whether he's vocal enough, whether he's, you know, aggressive enough, all of that kind of stuff. But, like, Kawhi Leonard never talks either, and he's figured it out. So I'm not saying OG can be Kawhi Leonard, but, you know, I understand the why you would take him in the first round. I would have taken him in the first round. I think role player, but I could see him being a starter.
Caleb Swanigan.
I'm tempted to say starter.
I'm tempted to say all-star.
I could see a starter. I like him a lot. Like, I was glad he went in the first round. I always thought he should go in the first round. You know, who knows? But, like, I made this point before. I don't know if I've made it on this podcast, but he's not Draymond Green in the sense they don't play similarly at all, right? They're not similar players right. in any way whatsoever. But they are similar in this way. You know, they incredibly productive college basketball players in the Big Ten. Both were Big Ten players of the year. Both played for good coaches. Both produced at an amazing level. And they also both don't measure a certain way. They don't move a certain way. And so people doubted both of them. You know, well, I like Draymond Green. Like, really plays hard and he's super productive. But, like, is he a three or is he a four? And can he do this and can he do that? I don't know. Just put him on the court and we'll see. And now you see. I think Caleb Swanigan's going to be a guy where you look up in January and you go, oh, wow. Look, he's a productive NBA player. I can't believe so many teams passed on him. It's not like he was hidden off at Eastern Washington or something. Like, he played for the Big Ten champion. And he produced at a historically great level. Why should it shock anybody that he's producing in the NBA as well? I just think he'll figure it out. I just think he'll figure it out.
We'll close it out with this. Most second-round picks are expected to be role players at absolute best. Most actually never even earn NBA time. But let's pick two players apiece that went in the second round that we think actually will be starting level players. I'll go first. I am so in on Monty Morris lasting a decade plus in the NBA. I can't emphasize it enough. I think he has the smarts, knows the game. His assist to turnover ratio in college was borderline historic, if not historic. In fact, I don't know if there's ever been a player that has had a better career assist to turnover ratio than Morris. The NCAA never tracked all the stuff going back all these decades, so you can't really tell for certain. I'm just way in on Monty sticking. And the other guy in the second round, I'm not going to say Jordan Bell, although I think Jordan Bell goes to the perfect spot. So he's going to be a benefit, I think, of where he's going. The other guy, I got to believe, is probably Jonah Bolden, who is an interesting case. I actually thought was a first-round talent. Went to UCLA, then, you know, didn't get great minutes, bounced out, went overseas. He's an Aussie. He played over there for a year, comes back. I think his physicality, his shooting ability, I think Jonah Bolden is kind of set. I don't know. I could see him playing for like five teams in 12 years and kind of being like a consistent, like a guy who can just contribute enough. I think that time will prove that he'll end up being a top 20 player from this draft.
I think in the second round, guys who could end up being relevant NBA players, and really a second round pick, if you get a rotation guy, you've like, that's a hit. Like
you hit without a doubt. Yes.
If you get a rotation guy, you've hit. I could see Shimi Ojeleye being a rotation guy in the NBA. I mean, another one that's going to be like, you know, you look up in January and you go, oh, wow, he's in the rotation for, I don't even remember who drafted him, who took him. Boston take him? Yeah, okay. Yeah. That may be tough, right? I mean, they've got so many good pieces there, it might be tough for him to break in. But if we looked up in 5 years and Shimi Ogile was still in the NBA and, like, in a rotation for somebody, that would not surprise me. I'm tempted to say Ivan Rabb.
Yeah.
You know, the Grizzlies have a need at that position. They're probably not bringing Jamichael Green back. They did not draft Ivan Rabb to go to the G League. You know, he's going to be on that roster. And they've got Deontay Davis, who's, you know, another young guy. They could bring back Zach Randolph. But I think, you know, when you're talking about Zebo at his age, probably not going to be able to play 82 games. And then it comes down to, if you need power forward minutes, do you give them to Deontay Davis or Ivan Rabb? I could see where we look up and Ivan Rabb is in the rotation for the Memphis Grizzlies. That wouldn't be surprising to me.
All right, 2018 mock draft. Give listeners an idea of your top 10 as it stands right now. And for those that might not know these players in and out, for the guys that are going to be in college next year, just let them know where they're going.
Well, I've got Michael Porter Jr. going first overall. I really do think there's four players who are in consideration for the number one overall pick. And it's Michael Porter, who's going to be at Missouri. Mohamed Bamba, who's going to be at Texas. DeAndre Ayton, who's going to be at Arizona, and then the kid from Slovenia, who I don't want to mispronounce his name, and I don't have the pronunciation guide right in front of me, but, you know, he's the best young European prospect. He was actually labeled that way, given the award this past season. He's only 18 years old. He's a 6'8 shooting guard. I obviously haven't seen him nearly as much as I've seen the other three players I've mentioned. I've seen those other three players you know, up close and in person, live, multiple times. But every NBA person I talked to told me you've got to have him in the top four. And multiple people told me that I got to have him in the top two. I initially had him going fourth overall, and I went and changed that yesterday just because when I started getting feedback from NBA people, they were like, nah, that kid's going top two or three. You should probably get him in the top two. So I think it's those four players. And then after that, I think it falls off a little bit, kind of comes down to what do you like. You know, is it Miles Bridges? Is it, you know, Colin Sexton? Is it Trayvon Duvall? Whatever. But I do think there's four really nice prospects at the top. And I think if I'm picking first overall at this moment, like if you hold that draft tonight, I probably want Michael Porter.
Michael Porter's my pick as well as of right now. I say that we have to acknowledge the fact that Quanza Martin had a projected lottery pick in Ivan Rabb. Returned under Martin, Rabb then falls to the second round. It's not Martin's fault entirely, but that has to be considered. Porter right now, to me, seems to have the best package for a future number one NBA pick, but let's just see what happens with Missouri last year. Listeners will note that I asked you to give me your top 10. You gave me really your top four. I mean,
I'll go through it. Okay, at five, I had Miles Bridges from Michigan State, of course. At six, yep. Wendell Carter, who's a freshman, going to be a freshman at Duke. At seven, Robert Williams, the big at Texas A&M.
Who could like be good in obscurity, but people are generally thinking that barring like unforeseen injury or whatever, like he's like a lock to be a top 15 pick, it seems.
Right. Trayvon Duvall at eight. Colin Sexton, Duvall, of course, going to be the point guard at Duke. Mm-hmm. Colin Sexton, who's going to be the point guard at Alabama, at nine. And Jaren Jackson, who's sort of a power forward center at Michigan State at 10. So what's interesting is that, and I know there's some people out there rolling their eyes like, how could you possibly do this? Like we said earlier, last year when I did it a year in advance, I got three of the top four correct and six of the top 10 correct. So of those 10 people I just named, I feel comfortable saying at least five or six of them probably going to actually go in the top 10 of the 2018 NBA draft. If you break it down by league, the SEC has eight players, eight. That's more than any other league. If you break it down by school, Kentucky has four in the first round. Duke has three. And then I think Michigan State, Arizona, Miami, and USC both have two first round projected picks on their roster. And obviously the surprise is there, or at least the surprise is relative to the things we usually talk about when we're looking at mock draft. Miami having two and then in the top 20, and USC having two in the top 30. That's abnormal, and that's why I think Jim Larrañaga on one side of the country and Andy Enfield on the other are both going to have like legitimate top 15 teams, teams that can compete at the top of the ACC and the Pac-12.
Yeah, I'm in on Miami being really good next year. USC absolutely should be. I want to see how they handle having all that talent. The Trojans got to be a top 20 team next year, but let's see it happen. Real quick, I think Duvall will play himself into being a top 5 pick next season. I'm very in on his capability, both at the college level and then translating to be a really nice pro point guard. So I'm way high on Duvall of all the guys you listed. Sexton's the one I want to see how he does with Bama, which has some nice pieces, obviously not a traditional college basketball power. And so you'll have concurring storylines in the SEC next year where you've got Porter. And Missouri's been good, don't get me wrong, but Missouri's been a down program. Bama has not been, you know, beating the world, so to speak. So they'll have, you know, projected top 10 picks on their roster. The SEC is going to be, you know, populated by a number of future potential NBA picks, specifically to start the season. So if for no other reason, the league is very interesting from that perspective. That's all.
Before we get out of here, the one-and-done rule has been back in the news in recent weeks, mostly because Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, said that, you know, he's got different views on the rule than he had when he took over as commissioner of the NBA from David Stern. And a lot of it is rooted in him watching the Ben Simmons documentary and just the way it showed that Simmons had, A, absolutely no business being on a college campus, and B, absolutely no interest in being on a college campus. And that was a bad look for so-called student-athletes. It was a bad look for the NCAA in general. And while Adam Silver isn't obligated to try to save, you know, college basketball from those types of situations, he has publicly acknowledged that his views are changing on how to address high school prospects and what the league essentially does to force them in many ways in you know, onto college campuses. Now, it's not totally up to Adam Silver. Like, he can't change rules by himself, but he's an incredibly smart man, and I can't imagine he would be talking publicly about this the way he is if he didn't think that there might be change on the horizon. You've written about this several times over the past few weeks, as recently as yesterday when John Calipari and Bruce Pearl talked about it on a SEC coaches conference call. Just your general thoughts on where we might be headed, your general thoughts on where we should be headed.
Yeah, I'll try and keep this general because honestly, GP, this is an issue that I think makes for easy debate. The reality is it's a complex issue without a perfect solution. And as I wrote last week in kind of an in-depth piece for the site, if there was a perfect solution, the smart people involved in the NBA would have found it by now. But ultimately, and Pearl kind of echoed this in his comments yesterday, you have three parties here. You have the NBA, you have college basketball, and you have the player. No matter what, one of those three entities will have to be giving up something in order to make any sort of potential quote-unquote solution work. Currently, that is the player. You could have argued that in the past it was college basketball when it wasn't getting these guys coming to the NCAA with Kobe and LeBron and all that stuff. So what I find interesting is that Silver is talking about this publicly now. Mike Bray told me that this was discussed with the National Association of Basketball Coaches by, like, the NBA. Kiki Vandeweghe, who came as sort of an NBA rep to the Final Four in 2015, kind of just threw this out there saying, hey, listen, we don't love the rule as is, this, that, and the other. Coaches, to a certain extent, even laughed it off like, you know, okay, well, you're not going to a baseball rule. We know that's not going to happen. And now what I was interested was that people seem to glom onto this baseball rule being the next automatic thing, and it does have drawbacks, GP. And one, I don't believe, in talking with some people on the NBA side, but primarily college coaches, the feeling is that the NBA does not want to go back to putting high school players in its league. They're trying to figure out, and Adam Silver specifically, and he has to deal with the Players Association. They got to bargain all this stuff. How can we improve our system but still not make a mockery of the college process? Because what is also true is that the NBA, and this comes from the mouth of of Izzo and even Phil Martelli, who called me up after the story. He said the NBA has never been so proactively trying to communicate with college basketball and the NCAA to make both infrastructures work as smoothly and as well as they can. It's the relationship has never been better, but there's still miles to go. So having said all that, my impression is that the NBA is going to try to deduce a solution where it allows players to commit out of high school if it chooses, but, and this is partly a guess and partly the only way I think this could possibly work, if it even gets to this point, I'm not saying that it will, you have to go to the G League because, one, the NBA is putting a lot of resources into that and it wants to promote it and it wants to make it bigger. You got to go to the G League if you're going to come out of high school. What happens from there is to be determined. I put on the table that if you do that, you can't play in an NBA game until after the All-Star break at best. If you want to promote your league and kind of ensure that the guys are coming in, have a period of adjustment, that's fine. But, GP, here's the issue. Two of them. One, you're still technically restricting a player, although they are getting paid. You're still restricting a player who might have the talent to play in the NBA when they step in. How you want to judge that is obviously, I mean, there's one LeBron every freaking 40 years, okay? So there's a difference between I can, quote, play in the NBA. What does that mean? Can you earn minutes off the bench and are you worthy enough? Or does that mean you're good enough as a top three pick to step in and be a starter immediately? Who's to say when and why and if you can even handle that, okay? There are questions that the NBA has to handle with that. And then two, if you go to a baseball model, which I do not believe is the best possible solution for college basketball, what is the philosophical difference between telling an 18-year-old high school player you can't go to the pros and telling a player who just completed his freshman year of basketball, found newfound market value because he had an incredible year and went from a guy that was projected in the 90s on a mock draft to the 20s, why is it fair for you to say, nope, you know what, you agreed to the college deal and you got to stay another year? There's nothing that you can do to technically force him to stay in school for another year. So, and baseball operates differently than basketball in so many different ways. I don't think that the models can overlap. So while I think it's become an easy talking point, I just don't think that switching over to a tweaked baseball model, which coaches are saying it would be 2 years instead of three in baseball, although I will say that a number of coaches want it to be 3 years. Obviously, they have their self-interest in regard to that. There's still a lot of ways to go here. My last thought in this parish is, I do believe change is going to come. I don't think we're going to have the system we have in place come 2020. I think something will happen, but I do not believe that whatever the next system that comes into place is going to be universally accepted as the better option than what we have right now.
Okay, a lot of thoughts on this. I'm okay with the baseball model. I do think it would be better if it's you go out of high school, you can go. But if you commit to a college, you're eliminated from the draft for 2 years. I like two better than three. I think it's more fair. I do fundamentally agree with you, though. If the problem right now, the moral problem right now is these young people coming out of high school are ready to be drafted and ready to become millionaires, but we're keeping them out of the league, not allowing them to be picked, then what's the difference between, I don't know, let's just say if you went to the baseball rule and it's a three-year rule. Well, obviously, John Collins isn't entering the NBA draft out of high school. He's a borderline top 150 prospect. But he becomes a first-round pick after 2 years of college. Now, we're dealing with the baseball rule, and he can't go? Well, you got to play one more year of college. Like, I think we'd start having the same conversations we have now about that in as it relates to being unfair to the so-called student-athlete. So I think it would be good for college basketball. Because, I mean, the biggest problem facing college basketball right now, in terms of popularity, at least this is my opinion, I don't know if you agree with this, it's the complete anonymity of the players. Nobody knows who's who. Because by the time you get a household name in college basketball, Grayson Allen being the exception, they're gone. Like, as soon as they're good, they're gone. Like, you go look at our All-American teams from this past year. All the first-team All-Americans are gone. Either they exhausted their eligibility or they just entered the NBA draft early. I believe all the second-team All-Americans are also gone. I think Bonzi Colson might be the most decorated college player actually returning to college basketball, certainly one of them. And so if I walked into any sports bar in America tonight and said, hey, who do you think is going to be the All-Americans in college basketball next season? People don't know. I mean, you and I know, but people don't know. Nobody knows. Like, really? People don't even know Miles Bridges. You know, like if I walked around with a picture of Miles Bridges and I said, who is this? I'm talking to sports fans. Nobody would know who Miles Bridges is. And so if you go to a baseball rule, whether it's 2 years or 3 years, like you could have, let's just say it was a 3 year rule. You'd have Caleb Swanigan coming back next year. You'd have Malik Monk and De'Aaron Fox coming back next year. Maybe not them actually, because they might have been the type that goes straight out of high school, but you get my point. You'd have Luke Kennard coming back next year. I mean, you'd have some really recognizable faces in the sport. I think that's tremendous for college basketball. I don't think it's fair for the players, though. And so I think if you put me in charge of the whole deal, here's what I would do. I'd go back to the way it used to be. If you want to go out of high school, you can. If you want to go after your freshman year, you can. If you want to go after your junior year, whatever. You go whenever you want to go. And if
I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah,
there's something to be said for it. I cannot see how we get back to that point personally.
You know what the NBA needs to do is normalize the G League. Like, they develop players in that sport, have forever developed players in that sport on the NBA roster. Like, you get a young guy who's clearly not ready to be on an NBA roster, but the talent was so enticing that you couldn't pass on it. So you drafted him 13th overall, and you give him guaranteed millions, and you put him on his roster, and he takes up a roster spot, and it's a roster spot that probably should go to one of the veterans. That's among the reasons that the NBA wanted to implement what is essentially known as the one and done rule. A couple different reasons, obviously. It's a few different reasons. One is you get a year extra to evaluate the prospects. You get to see them compete consistently against other prospects. You can sort of separate the guys who were frauds from the guys who are totally legit. Secondly, it's amazing branding. You know, without college basketball, you know, Kevin Durant's just a skinny kid coming into the NBA as opposed to somebody who just set all kinds of records at Texas. You know, without college basketball, Lonzo Ball's just a kid from Chino Hills entering the NBA. He's not big baller brand Lonzo Ball with LeVar Ball. Like, college basketball does an amazing job of marketing prospects.
Unquestionably.
For the NBA. Right. Like, so that's good, yeah, for the NBA as well. Like, you know,
I don't think the G League can ever get to a point where it legitimately.
I don't
either. It can never come. GP, I mean, we know this. Like, it can offer guys money, two-way contracts, the perhaps reality that you're tangibly closer to playing in the NBA sooner, but there's just I don't need to wax on about this. You know where I'm going,
right? Like, yeah. And then the one and done rule also, it keeps 18-year-olds off your roster, and that provides jobs for veteran players who might otherwise be out of the league. Like, if you were to so there's a whole bunch of reasons why the NBA went to this. I think that league would benefit from normalizing the G League, and I think they're trying to. They're investing more money in it. Basically, every franchise now has its own G League affiliate. A lot of the franchises are keeping them close to where their NBA franchise is located. In other words, here in Memphis, you've got the Memphis Grizzlies, and they just also bought a G League affiliate. They called it the Memphis Hustle, and it's gonna play in North Mississippi, about 15 miles from FedEx Forum. So they're going to have real prospects on that team, and they got two-way players who will be going, you know, shuttling back and forth from – you can keep everybody in one place, so you keep a closer eye on them. And you just need to say, okay, it's okay to go to the G League. Like, every baseball prospect spends time in the minor leagues. Like, it's okay to spend some time in what is essentially a minor league to develop, to get older, to get stronger, to get all of those things. And once that becomes normal for NBA prospects – I think that's a good thing for the NBA, because then you don't have 18-year-olds sitting on your bench. You've got 18-year-olds learning how to play against grown men, you know, in a more agreeable setting for their skill set and abilities at that time. So I guess I'd wrap it up with this. If you put it all on the table and ask me what I care about most, I care most about young people being able to do what's best for them. And if you don't have any business being on a college campus, have no interest being on a college campus, and actually are talented enough to where somebody will select you in a draft and guarantee you millions of dollars that can change your life and perhaps the lives of many people in your family, I fundamentally believe that young people should have an opportunity to do that. And so I would like even – I agree with you. I don't know that we're going back to this path. I would like for high school players, if they want to be able to enter the NBA draft out of high school. And if some of them make mistakes, that's fine. Young people make mistakes, bad decisions in this world every single day. Sometimes kids avoid college because they want to start a band. Sometimes kids skip college because they want to move to LA and be an actor. Sometimes kids skip college because they just are happy bartending and making some cash and partying for like whatever. Like I'm not here to be everybody's parents. I'll let everybody's parents be everybody's parents. I'm not trying to save young people. You hear that all the time. Well, what about these young people who make mistakes? Typically they're not young people make mistakes every day. If you really care that much about them, go to the Boys and Girls Club and put some time in. So that's what I fundamentally care about. Those young people being able to better themselves as quickly as possible coming out of high school. If those opportunities are available to them. And then the reality is, while I like watching college basketball when Lonzo Ball is involved and De'Aaron Fox is involved and Jason Tatum's involved and Josh Jackson's involved and Markelle Fultz is involved, and if we allowed prospects to enter the NBA draft straight out of high school, it's possible we would have seen none of those players in college basketball last year. History shows that college basketball will be fine no matter what, because there was an era from 95 through Greg Oden and Kevin Durant, coming to Texas and Ohio State. There was a window there where the best high school prospects did not come to college for the most part. We didn't get Kobe Bryant in college. We didn't get Kevin Garnett in college. We didn't get Jermaine O'Neal in college, Amari Stoudemire, so on and so forth. And the buildings were still full. The television ratings were still good. College basketball is unique in that people really do watch for the university. They don't watch for the individual players, and the stars always emerge from somewhere. When we didn't have one-and-done phenoms being the stars and faces of college basketball, we had Adam Morrison and J.J. Redick.
You still had Carmelo Anthony. He could have gone.
You'll still get some of them who come to college just because they want to do it for a year or they don't think they're ready or whatever their motivation might be. But college basketball, the stars are always there. Sometimes it's Jimmer Fredette. Sometimes it's Buddy Hield. Next year I think it's going to be Miles Bridges. It could be Alonzo Trier. But the stars are always going to emerge. We have to tell stories about somebody. Somebody's always going to be averaging 24 points per game. Somebody's always going to score 35 on national television. And so while I do like watching Anthony Davis and Derrick Rose and those types of guys in college, college basketball will be fine if they end up not playing college basketball anymore. We've gone through this before, and that window where we went through it suggested that college basketball will still be what it is, whether those players are around or not. I do think the best thing for college basketball, though, would be to have a rule that forces players to stay in school longer. But again, I don't prefer that because I don't think it's fundamentally fair for those players.
I agree. We can wrap it up there because I got plenty of stuff. But I know we're going to talk about this more on future podcasts. So, good chat, bud. We'll see. What happens when and whether this is going to be something that changes next year or the year after, that is to be determined, but we shall see.
Remember, you can subscribe to the Island College Basketball Podcast via iTunes, so please do that. Thank you all for listening here in late June, and we will be back next week, either Tuesday, Wednesday, whenever we feel like it, frankly, to record another Island College Basketball Podcast. So till then, take care.